Welcome to the Social Flight Live podcast, an audio version of our live show, hosted every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern at socialflightlive.com. Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Bose Aviation, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Massimo MightySat, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Social Flight Live. I'm Jeff Simon. We have a wonderful show for you this evening. Legendary aviation artist Sam Lyons is here. We're going to talk about his life, his story, his art, so many wonderful things. And I absolutely cannot wait for you to meet this really, truly spectacular individual that I'm thrilled to call a friend. Before we get started, just a few things. First of all, aviation is booming. It's all within Social Flight, where you can see all of the events happening and destinations. And when the weather is as spectacular as it is now, you need to get out there and fly. And so please check out socialflight.com and the free Social Flight mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. We have tens of thousands of aviation events, destinations, cool places to fly, our Fly to Win Challenge, where you can win prizes. All you need to do is check in at your local airport and you could win a prize. We just gave away a Lightspeed Delta Zulu headset to Landon Whiteman of Justin, Texas. He won that, and we are now in the process of giving away an Aspen E5 electronic flight instrument, glass for your panel, that you could win for doing nothing more than just checking in on the Social Flight mobile app. And if you get more points by checking in at different airports, keep your flying up and get on our leaderboard, well, then you get extra entries in order to increase your chances at winning. And then lastly, we also have our FAA Learning Center, where we've got wings courses. We can get credits for wings. We've got aviation maintenance technician courses where you can learn that, be part of that awards program. And if you're an AMP with an inspection authorization, you can do your recurrent training on Social Flight completely for free, completely on your own time, and get the certificates that you need for your FAA renewal of your IA. So it's all here just to support general aviation. And we are now looking forward to getting up there to Air Venture. It's July, and that means it's coming soon. And so if you manage to get up there, please keep an eye out for us, because we're going to have our Snag Some Swag promotion, and you can get all sorts of stuff from us just by spotting us there up at Air Venture. Tonight's broadcast is brought to us by UAvionics and their amazing AV30, AV20, SkyBeacon, TailBeacon, TailBeacon X, and SkySensor. It really is these amazing products that add so much safety and simplicity to your panel. We have it in the Bonanza. We have it in the Mustang behind me here that we're building. You're going to get to see lots more about that. And they are just wonderful people that do a ton to support general aviation. So lots more. Just check them out at uavionics.com. Now to tonight's guest. Sam Lyons is a legend in the world of aviation art. For nearly 40 years, Sam has been capturing the unique world of general aviation, presenting it in a way that takes you inside the painting and puts a smile on your face just from looking at it. Chances are that when you think of a painting of an airport or an airplane, you're actually picturing Sam's artwork. In fact, if you've ever seen the movie 1/6 Right, you might be surprised to know that the movie cover art is actually one of Sam's paintings as well. In spite of all of this success, I can tell you firsthand that Sam is one of the most down-to-earth and wonderful individuals you could ever meet. I had the pleasure of spending time with him at Sun and Fun and was absolutely blown away by his tales of flying and adventure and his art, just so many cool things. And you know, Sam is more than an artist. He is an accomplished pilot who paints a world that he knows and loves very deeply. As a pilot, Sam has owned two Cubs, a classic Stinson, and a Hatz biplane. He was inducted into the Georgia Aviation Hall of Fame in 2009 and is the official artist in residence of Sun and Fun, and his company, Lyons Studio, has been exhibiting at the Sun and Fun International Fly-In and Exhibition for about 25 years. I am thrilled to call him a friend and have him with us tonight. Please welcome to Social Flight Live, Sam Lyons. Hey there, Sam. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to join us here on Social Flight Live. I am thrilled to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I love that you're doing it from your studio too. This is where the magic happens.
This is my man cave.
So my goal is for people to get to know you, your artwork, and really what a wonderful person that I have always found you to be. And I'd like to start with an understanding of how you got connected first to aviation. What kind of got you into our world?
Well, it goes all the way back to my dad. He flew B-24 bombers in World War II. And he flew 31 missions and brought the crew home when they got done. And so I've been around aviation for a long time. And I kind of got hooked on model building and, you know, built some stick and tissue paper models. And then I changed into plastic models and kind of got into the artwork through that. I actually owned a hobby shop in Atlanta for 10 years called Historical Hobbies.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's where I started showing my painting, so to speak. I'd do a painting and I'd hang it up in the shop and see what people thought about it. And they liked it enough to where I started doing prints.
So which came first? Was it your involvement in aviation or was it your artwork?
Well, a little of both. I was one of these kids who always drew in my notebook in school, you know, when I should have been paying attention. And I started doing some paintings and I wanted to do something that was what I consider was photorealistic, and which is not easy to do. And I tried real hard to do some stuff and it just never came out right. And so And when I was in college, I needed one credit to get out of college, and they offered me marriage and family or art. So I took the art class. Made an A. So I kind of got hooked on the art, and I could see where I could do some things that I wanted to do and make the paintings look real, you know. Oh. I want to have you be able just to feel like you could walk into the painting and be part of it, you know.
Got it. Tell me a little bit about your foray first into aviation itself. Do I understand that your first way in was through gliders?
Yes. So when I was in college, I watched a Walt Disney thing that was on Sunday night, and they had a story in there about this kid who saw some gliders, and then I think it's called Soaring with the Condors, and he ends up flying a glider and flying up there with the condors. And I was looking at that, and I'm going like, you know, I've always wanted to fly, and I'm going like, this is really cool. And my buddy who I played tackle on the football team, and he played end, and he said, well, you know, up where I live, it's about 70 miles from here. He said, they got a glider school. And I went, let's go, you know. So I went up and I took, paid, you know, $15 for 15 minutes, I think. And when I came down, I said, let's go again. And when the second time I came down, I said, okay, I got to do this. So I signed up for lessons, and I took lessons and got my glider license, and that was my first license I had, was private pilot glider only. And so that's kind of how it started. And then later I got my power rating. I did that because I was getting so many flights and so many different airplanes with people and getting a little stick time in this and a little stick time in that. And so I had a commission job from Pat Epps and the Epps Aviation in Atlanta at the Peachtree DeKalb Airport. And we did a deal where part of the commission deal was he gave me enough time in his flight school to get my powered sign off.
Oh, so wow.
That worked out real well.
Yeah, no kidding. Little sweat equity and artistry to get you there.
Yep. And it was kind of funny because I started learning in a Piper Warrior. Huh? And during the time I was training, I bought the Simpson 108-3. And so I had the little grass strip where I had the airplane. There were some guys on there who had Stinsons, and so they kind of showed me the ropes and how to fly the Stinson and everything. So then I got it signed off that I could fly the Stinson down to Petrie DeKalb Airport and take lessons because I didn't have my pilot's license. And the kid that I was taking lessons from, he wasn't tailwheel qualified, so we had to get him tailwheel qualified so he could fly my airplane, which I was already flying. You know, I had a bunch of time in it on the side, you know. So it was fun.
That's pretty wild. The Stinson 108's a really cool plane. What drew you to that?
It was one of my favorite airplanes. I tell you, that's the easiest tail dragger to fly. It's very forgiving, and you can do a slip in it, but it doesn't have a whole lot of rudder. That just got a big tail, and coming into the grass strip where I had it, it was uphill at both ends. So I could, you had to come in down the hill, and I just did a slip coming all the way down and crank it around straight and land on the grass strip. Yeah, I'm sure it gave some people, the road was right across the bottom of the field, I'm sure I gave some people some thrills when I came down the hill, and they weren't expecting to see me cross the road when they were driving down the road.
Is that all metal, the Stinson?
No, it was Air Acres. It's in Woodstock, Georgia.
Oh, I meant, is the aircraft metal? All metal?
No, it was fabric.
Oh, fabric. Yeah. They're gorgeous. I think I might have been thinking of a Luscombe or something, but rave about Stinsons.
Well, they a lot of people did metalize the things, but the one I had was basic fabric wings, fabric fuselage over tube, you know.
That's great. I love that you had an aircraft while you were still learning.
I had to teach the guy how to fly my Stinson so he could teach me how to fly.
And then at the same time, you basically got so much experience from the gliding side of things. How did that translate into your command of the tailwheel of a tailwheel aircraft? Do you think the fact that you'd been flying gliders helped a lot?
Tremendously. My instructor would get up and when we were flying, and he would pull the power and said, "Can you make the airport?" And I said, "Well, yeah, it's right there." You know, he didn't understand that in a glider you can't go around; you have to do it right. You know, so I could, I'd drive him crazy. One time we were coming in at Charlie Brown Airport, and we were flying, and I thought we were going to fly over it, and we were about 2,000 feet over the end of the runway, and he says, "All right, land there." And so I just cranked that thing around sideways and went down the hill and cranked it back around, put it on the numbers. And he said, You could have gone around. I said, "Didn't need to. You told me to put it on the, I put it here." So it kind of blew his mind a little bit, I think.
Schooled your instructor a little bit in slipping and energy management.
Well, with a glider, that's the first thing you learn is how to slip an airplane, because when you come in, you always try to come in a little high and fast when you're coming in because you want to make sure you make the field. And when you cross over to the threshold, then you just crank it around sideways and, just ride the elevator down.
That's awesome. So during this time that it sounds like you've got both of these things happening at the same time. You've got the artwork starting to move up and then at the same time as your love of aviation is growing. Tell me a little bit about how you learned the art of painting. I know you said you took one class, but so much of it you've described as being self-taught.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I had a friend who had a friend, and the friend's friend was named Jerry Crandall, and it may be familiar with his work. He's done a lot of aviation stuff, and he's done a lot of Western stuff. He unfortunately is no longer with us, but so this friend of mine asked him about painting airplanes. So he showed him what he knew, and then I was kind of over on the side looking at, and I kind of picked up some pointers here and there and stuff. And so my friend would do a painting, and he'd call me up to come over and critique it. And he didn't want me to come over and critique it. He wanted me to come over and tell him how good it was. And so I'm going like, well, if I can see the problems that he's, you know, in his painting, why couldn't I do a painting and do it right? So I did a couple of paintings and they came out pretty good. And I did a couple of more and they came out pretty good. And I thought, well, I'm pretty lucky. This is working out. Okay. And so then I decided, well, you know, maybe I can do this. And this is when I had the hobby shop. And I started doing prints, and it was real tough to, you know, you take your stuff around into galleries and you show it to them, and nobody knew who I was, and they would look at it and say, well, that's real nice. Come back when you got some more stuff. You know, they wanted somebody who had a known track record, you know, kind of. Mm-hmm. And so I managed to find one guy who had a gallery frame shop, and it was in a little shopping center that had a little restaurant, lunchtime kind of restaurant where they had sandwiches and stuff. And it was right across the street from Dobbins Air Force Base. So a lot of the people from Dobbins Air Force Base would come over and have lunch there. And so he asked me if he could hang a couple of my paintings, you know, my prints down there. And so he framed them up real nice and hung them down there. And all of a sudden he started selling my prints like hand over fist. And so he started buying 10 at a time. Then he started buying 20 at a time. And then he started buying 40 at a time. And he got me enough money that I got over the hump. You know, I mean, I could reinvest in more prints and everything. And then I stumbled on this thing called Oshkosh. And I thought, well, you know, if I can't sell aviation art to 50,000 crowd, crazy aviation idiots, I can't sell it. So I got up there, got a booth, and sure enough, did right well. And then I did got into Sun and Fun and did the same thing at Sun and Fun. I had a booth both places for years.
Wow. When you were getting started at that first location outside the base, were you at that time doing more military type things, or where was it still GA?
I did a little of both, and you know, back then I painted florals. I painted a lot of different. I painted cars. I had a lot of different stuff in my bag of tricks, but I kind of got well known in the aviation community. So that's kind of where that was my niche. So I moved right on in there.
But it wasn't just GA or it wasn't just military when you were there. You were kind of
No, it was mostly just pretty airplanes, whatever I could come up with that I thought made a pretty scene, you know.
What made you decide and settle on a specific type of painting? Acrylics versus water versus oil?
Well, I tried different mediums, and I've done quite a bit of colored pencil stuff that I've turned into prints, but I tried oils, and I was too impatient. I couldn't wait for them to dry, you know, and so that did not work out well for me. And acrylics, they dry very fast, you know, and you can pretty well do whatever you want to with them. And I got into airbrushing some of the artwork too, and the airbrush lays down some beautiful, you know, gradated colors and stuff like that. And you can do a lot with an airbrush. I have owned probably a half a dozen airbrushes over, you know, the time that I've been painting. Yeah. But acrylics sort of was where I got, you know, hung into.
And does, when you're airbrushing, is that airbrushing acrylic?
Yes. Airbrushing acrylics. Yeah.
Wow. Is that something that do you still use airbrush as part of your techniques?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's just another way to get paint on the board. You know, you can use brushes, you can use the airbrush, and you can use anything you want to get paint on the board. And, you know, sometimes I use a sponge and dab it in the paint and then put it, you know, dab it onto the painting to make trees and this, that, and the other. So you just use whatever makes it happen, you know?
Was there any specific aviation kind of, artwork, inspire, you know, people that you look to as as inspiration of certain techniques or anything like that?
Well, there's been a lot of people that I've admired, everybody from Keith Ferris to Nicholas Trudgen to Robert Taylor. You know, those guys are out of England and they do some really nice stuff. And for a while I belonged to the American Society of Aviation Artists, and there's a lot of really good artists in there, Gil Cohen, and there was Wren Wicks was one of the founders, and he did, believe it or not, he did a lot of pinup art for a casino in Las Vegas. But, so there've been a lot of people who've been, you know, kind of like I've watched and try to learn from, and you can look at somebody's artwork when it's hanging up and you walk up to it and you look at it and you're like, okay, I see what he did there. Yeah. Okay. I got that one. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because when I had my booth and I had artwork hanging up, I'd find people staring and they were looking. I said, you taking a lesson? Because I knew what they were doing. You know, they were trying to figure out how I did that and everything. So that was fun.
That's got to be a big compliment when someone comes over and is actually learning your technique by looking at your paintings.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And it was funny. I used to have some ads in aviation magazines. And I'd get these calls from people say, look, I saw your ad in there and I'm really interested in becoming an aviation artist. I said, what do you do now? Well, I'm a brain surgeon now, or I'm a this, that, and the other. And I'd say, don't quit your day job. I said, You want to make $1 million in the aviation art business? Start with $2 million and give it a couple of years, you know.
I love that. I want to give people kind of a sense of this and get a little bit of background for you. So I want to bring up a couple of these because it really shows this. I'm very drawn, especially to your general aviation and vintage paintings and those pieces. Tell me a little bit about the 140 that's here in this one.
I did that for a customer who had me do it for his son. That was his son's 140. He'd restored that 140, and so he wanted me to do a picture of it that he could give to his son. And what's interesting is the background that you can kind of see is Oshkosh with no airplanes. The red barn back there and just, you know, different things that you see at Oshkosh that I use for the background. But, you know, usually that would be totally full of airplanes.
So that's fascinating. It didn't occur to me. That's definitely one that I didn't realize.
Yeah, and this is one I did for I did it for somebody who wanted to donate it to the Smithsonian because they've got the original airplane that Amelia Earhart flew up there on display. And so we had a presentation up there in front of the airplane when I did the, you know, donated the painting. But that was when she landed in Ireland, and there's a picture I worked from of her standing on the side of the airplane like that, but you couldn't see the airplane because there were so many people crowded around it. So I managed to score a model of the airplane that I used to, you know, draw the airplane from, and then I just stuck her up there where she needed to be.
I love that. That's very, very cool. And then the next one, this is my personal favorite. This one really touches my heart. Tell me about this one.
That was basically based on a photograph that my wife did in the hangar behind our house where I had the J3 sitting there. And I thought most of it was really good subject matter, but there was a lot of clutter in the background. So, you know how airplane hangers are. And so I did the painting of the airplane, cropped it, did it, and did, you know, eliminated all the background and just hung the most important parts together, and it came out very nice, I thought.
One of the things that's so striking about this, in my opinion, is that it's intentionally asymmetrical and not centered, and really shows different things. That's, you don't see a lot of that in artwork and in aviation artwork. Can you talk us through that decision?
It's a technique that I use every now and then, but this is the way this one just needed to be. It needed to be one-sided, you know, and it did show off the airplane very well. I had the airplane at the time, so everything you see in the painting is correct, down to the screws and, you know, everything that you know, is on a J3 Cub.
Yeah, I especially like how the window light comes up to the bottom of the wing, and you've got the inspection panels showing and the rib stitching, and all of that. It's really quite nice.
Thank you. It was a fun one to do. It took a while.
I can imagine. And this is one of the most famous ones, I think, that you've done, simply because of the movie. Tell me the story about being connected to 1/6 Wright.
Well, I met Brent, who did the movie 1/6 Wright, at Sun and Fun, and we got to be friends and stuff. And he asked me to do this painting based on a photograph that he had. And in the photograph, in the background where the hangars and things are, there were jets and a lot of, you know, more modern aircraft back there. And so when I did the painting, I did it without any of the new airplanes in the background. If there's airplanes back there, they're all older airplanes. I think there's a DC-3 back there and a few other odds and ends. But it was a fun thing to do, you know, for Brent.
Mm. So he approached you when the movie was already kind of pushing through its last stages. I always remember seeing this image attached to the movie.
Yeah, well, we did prints based on the movie and everything, and Sporty's used to sell them. Sporty's Pilot Shop.
Yeah,
and they did very good with the prints. They would sell the prints and the movie together sometimes, you know.
That's fantastic. This is another really, really gorgeous one. Of course, you know, Swifts at GA News recently did a story on what they're flying, and their gorgeous aircraft to begin with.
Yeah. This was up in Lee Bottom Airport. They have a fly-in every year that's a lot of fun. And so I used the airport as the background, and then I had an aerial shot of the Swift, and I thought, you know, this thing is so shiny, I'm gonna see if I can pull it off and make it look shiny. And what's interesting about shiny things is there's no silver involved with the painting of a silver airplane. It's always other things. It's reflections of the sky, reflections of the ground, reflections of the horizon. And if you put them all together right, they come out very nice.
I always find that to be fascinating. The idea of the look of chrome, the look of polished aluminum, is an illusion, really.
Yes, right? That's called, like, put the magic in it.
Yeah, like the one thing you think of, what is the color of aluminum, is the one thing that is absolutely not in the paint.
That's right. Yeah. And a lot of people can't realize that when they look at it, it's a silver airplane. Well, no, it's not a silver airplane. Looks like a silver airplane, but it's all sorts of different colors.
Was there anything, what did it take for you to learn that technique, or what do you recall from that? Because that seems like a very advanced technique to learn how to do a mirrored shiny surface.
I learned it from a gentleman named Ron Griss. I was pushing Binks airbrushes, and Binks had a booth, and they had Ron at the booth, and they had me at the booth, and Ron was a great airbrush artist. He actually painted some of the Star Trek models. I mean, physically, he was the guy that painted that big old model of the Enterprise. And so he said, let me show you how to paint silver. So he painted a silver ball and he showed me, this is this, this is that, this is this, this is what it looks like when the reflections bend around and stuff like that. And all of a sudden I looked at everything differently, totally differently, because you're driving down the highway and you're in a red car and there's a blue car next to you and your reflection of your red car's in the blue car, but what color is the red car in the blue car? You know, and you start going, oh yeah, I see what it is. So you, that's how you kind of work around getting reflections. You know, you have to really, really look at them and dissect them and figure out what you're really looking at.
That's fascinating. That's a, yeah, that has always, always kind of blown my mind. And in fact, it's even something when you're not talking about the, about artwork, creating a painting, it's something that we're even thinking about when we look at things like what we're going to paint the Mustang behind me, because you, if you pick a silver that you look at, you know, out of a book of colors, you're like, well, that's, that ends up looking like paint at the end of the day. But yeah, then you start exploring some other colors that are not really chrome or silver, or, you know, exactly. And then you hold it up and you curve the sheet of metal and you start to realize, that actually looks like something polished, even though it's not the color you'd expect.
It's amazing how you can put things together like that and it changes the whole look of the thing. You know, you think it doesn't look silver enough and you put something up there that's red and all of a sudden, wow, it's silver.
Exactly. You start looking, you start using colors that you didn't expect and you're like, wait a minute, dark looks light. That's strange.
Yeah.
That's very, very cool. I love that. This one is so, puts a, such a huge smile on my face. Brent Maul was here on the show, of course, but the Maul family is ubiquitous with short takeoff and landing and all these things. And this was a photo. So tell me the story about how you came to paint this.
Well, the, Brent and his sister commissioned me to do this and, they had the photograph, the old photographs, and then they had, the photographs were in black and white. So I had to do something in color. And so I went down to Mall down in Lower Georgia, where is it, in Valdosta, I think maybe. Mm-hmm. But, and that hangar was still there. There were there was another hangar to its left that is not in the picture. There's just palm trees and stuff like that and a water tower back there that's actually there, but I removed the hangers that were next to this hangar because back when he did this there was only one hangar there, and but the word Mall has always been on the top of it like that. And so I did it like this, and he used to do that. He'd back it up in the hangar and rev that thing up and come out of there and snatch it and go straight up. And he did it until he snagged the tail on the top of the hangar there. And his wife, Brent's mom, said, okay, that's it. No more.
You're done.
You're done. That's it.
But we're happy to memorialize the photo of things you have done before you, you know, in the days of your youth.
Yeah. Sometimes you can, you know, take things back if you pick up the right stuff. I go when I'm knocking around, if I go to an airport, an old airport, and there's got some neat old hangers, I just take pictures of the hangers because I figure one day I might need one for my, you know, for a background in my painting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, putting things together. Another thing that I really love about your work is, although so many of them are bright, sunny, beautiful days with puffy clouds, there are also some that you really indulge yourself with some color experimentation and depth. And this is one of them. Can you talk me through this?
Yeah, that's Taylor Craft on floats. And I had a deal with the Seaplane Association, and they put it out to all their members that to send me photographs of their, you know, their best photographs of seaplanes. And so I got tons of photographs from these guys, and I finally settled on this particular scene because I thought it really looked neat and had a lot of atmospheric things going on in it, and it had a neat reflection. And so I cranked it out, and it turned out wonderful. There's a lot of airbrushing on this one too, in the sky, in the water.
Tell me a little bit about reflection, because that plays a big role in this one. And like what you did technique wise to create. You talked to, of course, about like doing metal and chrome, but doing reflections is kind of interesting as well in what you've got in the water here.
Well, it's another one of those, look at what's there and duplicate what's there, and you have to dissect it and figure out what's there. And if you have ripples in the water, you have ripples in the reflection. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you look at the wing that's in the reflection, it's kind of distorted and everything, and that's because of the movement of the water.
Yeah, it's this is very, very beautiful. I love the serenity of it, and it really sucks you into the moment.
Yeah, you feel like you could just walk down the dock and get in that thing, you know.
You really do. that's the best compliment any piece of artwork can have. This is another great one, because you've done a lot of Cubs, and this is really kind of showing the kind of coming out of an air park.
Yeah, that's a legend Cub that a friend of mine had, and he ended up giving it to his son. And before that, he wanted to have a painting of his son in the airplane. So I had pictures of his airplane. And at Oshkosh one time, they had a framework of a Cub with no skin on it. And so we stuck the kid in the front seat, and I took pictures of him so I could get the angle of him in the airplane. So when I painted him in the airplane, it would look right. And that's the grass strip where I used to live. And my house is on the, let's see, how are we looking at this thing? There's one with a blue roof on the hangar. Well, mine's the one next to it.
Oh, wow. And that's, what was that? Eagles?
Air Acres.
Oh.
Air Acres. Yeah. And I painted my Cub. Just, if you look just right off from the tail of this airplane, you see there's a yellow Cub sitting on the ground down there. So that's my Cub.
So we're going to come back to the things that you hide in your paintings, my friend. But before we do that, I want to do one more here, which is those people who are familiar with this Air Show Act, world's smallest airport. What's the story on this painting? Because this touches me too.
I did that for Grady Thrasher, whose dad was the guy who was doing this. And his dad came back from World War II and wanted to keep doing some aviation stuff. And he started doing parachute jumps. And when he was coming down the parachute, he looked at all the people that were there. And they said, these people are paying to see this stuff. So he decided to get an aviation act together. And he actually, that was his, I think that's like a 46 Ford. And he would do this landing at the shows and stuff. He's one of the first people that, you know, did this with a Cub. And it was interesting because Grady Thrasher, who commissioned this, his dad was the guy who did the flying. And he was telling me that was their family car. And he said that they had to be real careful because when they took it downtown in Athens, Georgia, if they parked it on the curb, they would take out a light pole because the overhang of that platform. So they had to be kind of careful with it. But that was Thrasher Brothers Aerial Circus.
That's hilarious. I love that is, you know, that was the original and that was the real thing, and that was their family car.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was the family car.
That's fantastic. So the last painting that we were looking at, you mentioned that you put your Cub into the painting. And here we are with another one that there is certainly something hiding here. And so the people who are fans of your work and follow it know that there's a little bit of a game and an Easter egg thing that can be played with just about all your paintings. You want to tell me what's hiding behind the little pump house or whatever that is over there, that shed?
Black 51 Chevy pickup truck. I had the truck and it needed a paint job, so I started putting in my paintings, giving it a token paint job. And then people started seeing it, and the next thing they wanted to know in the next painting, where's the truck? So all of a sudden I had to put the truck in all my paintings, and it's in pretty much all of them if you look. It's hidden, sometimes it stands right out.
So this is the Where's Waldo game that you can play for where the 1951 pickup truck is. And yep. When did you start doing that? And did they spot it right away and start requesting it?
Yeah, pretty much. I just did it for fun. I stuck it in a painting, you know, because I really needed to get the truck painted. And I said, well, I'll just stick it in here. And people stumbled on it. And that was before I really hit it really bad. You know, I mean, some of them I've hidden it so bad that you really have to know where it is to see it. And some of them it's right in your face. So
this is an example of one where it's very hidden. Do you want to give it away or you want people to have to find it?
Well, it's almost impossible to find, but if you take a business card and hold it kind of at an angle and put it up on that mountain, some of those shadows make the truck going up the mountain.
Take a business card.
You know, the flat edge of a business
card. I'm imagining this. And you put it up against the mountain, and then you'll see the pickup truck going up the mountain.
Yep. The pickup truck's made out of shadows. I mean, it's not black. It's blue and, you know, kind of shadowy colored things.
I absolutely love that. And it doesn't stop at just, you know, general aviation art. Here's an example of some of your military art, which is absolutely gorgeous. I love this shot. It's in here too.
Yeah, that's a painting I did for a lady whose husband was a plane captain on the Bonhomme Richard. That was the carrier. And that carrier actually served all the way up through Vietnam. They put an angled deck on it at that point, but they were still using the same carrier. And my truck is in there. You have to really look for him. But if you look carefully, parked up against the island in the shadow, my 51 pickup truck is sitting there.
I love that.
What's interesting is the time frame of this, where this would have happened, would be perfect for my truck, because this was around 1951 Korean War.
Yeah, so hey, who's to say the captain didn't find special dispensation to take his brand new truck on?
Yeah.
This is also a great, great painting, Chasing the Rising Sun, or Chasing the Sun, for obviously double entendre on the meaning.
Yep. Yeah, chasing Japanese with a Hinamaru on the side, and a zero. And the number three was his name was Jim Strag, and they called him Big Jim Strag. And I actually got to meet him at Oshkosh, and he wasn't big at all, but he was a professional wrestler evidently, so they called him Big Jim Strag. And he flew as Tommy Blackburn's wingman in this squadron. So I stuck his plane up front and did Blackburn's in the back.
Wow. That is very, very cool. So I want to go skip back through a few here and see if there's any other tips you can give us of which ones had it in there. And it's okay if I pick a couple that don't, you can just say move on.
I think that was before I started putting the truck in there.
Okay.
trucks in there. It's it may be cropped a little bit, but it's going down the road to the left of the airplane in the trees there.
Ah.
To look for it. I'm trying to remember where I put that thing.
It's in here?
Yeah, it's on the pontoon. If you look up, I think toward the front of the pontoon, it's up there somewhere.
I love it. I love that it's a game. I'm going to leave people to make sure that they go and find
It's in there. You can actually see the nose of it sticking out of the hangar door right under the airplane.
Even to them, did they know you were doing that?
They wanted it. They had to have it.
Exactly.
I mean,
the
truck had to be in there.
Absolutely.
And it's actually, I think in this one several times, it's going down the road on the far side of the airplane.
Uh-huh.
But when it gets to be this small, they look like little black ants, you know, kind of thing. But they're in there.
Did it make it into 1-6 right?
Yeah, it's over parked on the hard stand by that DC-3, I think, over there.
Wow. And my favorite here?
Look in the reflection in the spinner.
Oh, my. I didn't even know that's where it was. Huh.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great.
It's fun. Sometimes it's interesting when you're doing the painting to figure out where you're going to put it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't have even thought to look there. That's great. Yeah. And that's another perfect example of the challenge of you know, how do you create a polished spinner? And that's a great one.
Yeah, I got the reflection of the airplane in the bottom of the spinner, you know, and you can actually see the openings for the air filter and stuff in the reflection.
Yeah, that is wonderful.
Where is it in Amelia?
I love how you have to think about it. That means it's really well hidden.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in there somewhere. I was trying to remember where it is.
We can challenge other people to find it. That's,
yeah. Keep looking. Let me know if you find it. Tell me where it is. It's sticking out of the red barn back there in the, right off the wingtip.
Oh, there you go. That's fantastic.
Damn,
I love it. It's a great game to play. It's just so much fun. I just love any time that we can hang out and play looking at your work. I also want to talk about a little left turn, a little non-aviation. You do a lot of scuba diving.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm PADI certified.
Assistant instructor with PADI, Professional Association of Diving Instructors. And I have been assistant instructor since, I think, 1978.
So you've been teaching diving since then.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And as I understand it, the only reason it's assistant instructor is just because of the workload involved and everything else. If you were to step up, you're obviously qualified.
You almost have to have a business when you get to be a full instructor. Assistant instructor, I can help, you know, regular instructors, and I can teach some things to people. And if I go anywhere and I have my certification card, nobody questions what your abilities are. They figure if you're assistant instructor, you know what you're doing. So that, you know, they don't look at you weird. They say, come on, get the gear on, let's go.
And are you still active in diving?
I haven't been since COVID. COVID hit, a lot of the dive operations pretty much had to shut down, you know, because of the rules and regulations. And so my last dive was right before COVID hit, and COVID hit, and I couldn't go diving it for a long stretch, and I haven't really gotten back into it. I'd like to get back into it. I just haven't done it yet.
One of the other things I want to cover is your, your notoriety and fame of all of your artwork has given you quite a few opportunities to do some pretty amazing flying.
Yeah.
Can you give us some of the highlights of things that you've done?
Well, I've had a lot of friends who have airplanes, or they can fly airplanes that they, you know, get around. I had a P-51 ride with Hess Baumberger, who he owned the P-51 that was painted in the same colors as his P-51 that he flew in World War II. So this guy was a World War II pilot, but he was still flying, and this had to be back in the around the 80s, I guess. And I got a backseat ride in the P-51 with him. But then I had another friend who had a B-25, and I got to ride in the B-25, and so just that was a lot of fun, and people appreciated my artwork and what I was doing. And then all of a sudden I realized, well, you know, there's this organization called the Air Force Art Program, and it's out of the Pentagon, and you do paintings, and if you donate a painting, you know, they hang it in the Pentagon, or they hang it somewhere prominent, and so your artwork's on display in a lot of neat places. And I had the airbase at Dobbins, they were flying F-15s, and the general who was ahead said, I want you to do a painting of my airplane, and he said, and I'll get you a ride in the F-15. And I went, okay, it sounds good to me. So I swapped off a ride in an F-15 for a painting of his airplane. And wow. It wasn't an ordinary ride either. We went out and went dogfighting.
Really?
So, yeah, we went out with another guy, and we got to the point where we split, and he went one way, and we went another way. Then we turned around and came back toward each other, and then it was a furball, man. We went round and round, and there were times when I looked up, thought I'd be looking at the sky, and I was looking at the ground. You know, I mean, I never realized that airplanes skid in the ocean, I mean, in the water, the air. I mean, it's just like you're on the water, and that F-15 would go pop, 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 go sideways, you know, just skipping across like you'd skip a rock across the water.
Really?
That was the first 9G ride I got, and then I ran into some people at Oshkosh, one of the guys that there was a friend, had a friend who was with the Mako's, Florida Mako's, flying the F-16. And so he said, come on down and, you know, maybe we can get you a ride. And so I called the Air Force Art Program and told them what I wanted to do. And so they gave me orders. They cut me orders to go down there. And it said, familiarization flights are authorized. So that meant I could go, you know. And so I got the F-15, F-16 ride. Went down through the Florida Keys and out over Fort Jefferson and came back around and went up to 40,000 feet. He knows that thing over, and we broke the sound barrier going straight down at the ocean.
Oh, man.
And the turn at the end was my second 9G turn. And then I did get a ride with the Blue Angels. I donated an original painting I did to the Blues, and they gave me, you know, a ride in the their F-18s. So I've had the F-18, the F-15, and the 16 ride.
How wonderful.
So all through the artwork, you know.
That's absolutely fantastic. I really, really love that.
Me too. I mean, it's something not everybody can say. Even people that are in the Air Force or Navy, they may have flown the 15, or they may have flown the 16, but they didn't fly the 18, you know.
That so is
I've got
so cool.
All of those things logged up.
Well, Sam, it's time, this time of the show, that we like to do what we call Social Flight's Fast Five. You going to be up for that?
Sure.
All right. Sam Lyons, this is your Social Flight's Fast Five. Five quick questions so that people can get to know you. And there are no wrong answers. This is just all about having some fun and getting to know you a little bit more. And we're going to start with question number one, which is, you have had the opportunity of flying a whole lot of different types of aircraft, both yourself and as a back or right seater. What comes to mind as being the favorite or most memorable aircraft that you've flown?
Well, I love the Stinson. It's as far as a comfortable airplane and just a pleasure to fly. But then I've always loved the Cub, low and slow with the door open.
So the Stinson and the Cub kind of tied there for different purposes.
Yep. Yep. I like the hats. It flew a lot like the Cub, but it was just too small for me.
Got it. All right. Question number two. And again, you've had so much flying experience going from gliders all the way up. Was there a particular moment or situation that you can remember that was either a little bit scary or something that you learned from and kind of changed maybe your flying or your approach to aviation?
There's several. I'll give you one that was fun. The guy who did my annual on the Stinson, he had a grass strip next to his house. And I had never been there before. And he explained to me what the thing looked like. And there was this house over here. And then there was some junk cars over here. And, you know, and back at that point, I had a Loran. I didn't have GPS. So it wasn't all that precise. So I got up to where I thought his airport should be, and I started looking around, and I saw this grass strip, and there was some old cars parked over here, yeah, and there's a house over there, yeah, that all matches up. So I said, well, I guess that must be it. So I said, but gosh, he told me he had 1,500 feet. I said, it doesn't really look like 1,500 feet. But anyway, I set it up, came in, put it right down on the end, and I'm rolling down the runway, and all of a sudden I realized that there's a dog leg turn at the end of the runway, and there's a pole sitting up there that I said, if I could go up that way, I'm gonna hit that pole with my wing. So all of the grass that was in that field was real tall, so I just mowed through the grass, came out, turned that thing around, and this elderly gentleman came out and he says, could I help you? I said, well, I was looking for George Leamy's place. And he said, oh, it's about a mile over there. I said, well, this is the only place I've found that looked like the, you know, what he told me. He said, well, I fly my radio control out of here, 600 feet, that thing was.
So, and you got back out of there?
Well, I called George up and he came over and we took everything out of that airplane we could get out of there. And I said, I told the gentleman who owned the property, I said, you evidently have a bush hog, right? And he said, yeah, could you mow me a little more runway? So he mowed me another 300 feet, so I had about 900 feet. And if the plane was very light, so George just said, give it all you got, go down to the, you know, when you get close to the end, pop the flaps up and pop the flaps down, and you'll bounce up and you'll get, you know, get into enough airspace that you can get out of here, because there was no trees at the end of it, it was just all high grass. So, you know, I got it out and went over to George's place. But every year that I'd go get my annual, I'd come down and buzz Mr. White's field, and he'd come over to the where I was having the annual done, you know, hang out and say hello and everything. It's kind of fun.
Oh, man, that is a good story. I'm glad you made it out okay.
I learned that you could put a Stinson in 600 feet.
Oh, man. If necessary. All right. Question number three is, if you had an opportunity to go back in time and re-experience a moment of your life, not to change things in the future, but just to be there, just to go back and re-experience it for a moment, what comes to mind?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the most interesting things I've done is I bought a Cub that was out in Seattle, Washington, and I flew it back to Air Acres in Atlanta, Georgia. That was 7 days, 7 hours a day. And boy, you talk about seeing the country. You know, I don't think I got over 1,500 feet in the air at any one particular time. And a lot of times you'd be flying along and watching the cars pass you, you know, on the road. So that was a very meaningful trip and interesting trip. And I flew right by the Golden Gate Bridge. I got to fly over Edwards Air Force Base. You know, I called them up and asked them if I could cross over, and they said, what are you flying? I said, Piper Cub. And they said, come on. So they loved it, you know. It was kind of fun.
I love that. That's fantastic.
All right, question number four. If you could go back and say something to your younger self in your teens or your 20s, give some piece of advice, what do you think you'd say?
That's a good one. Probably that I should have gotten my power ticket earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, I got my glider ticket in when I was in college, and that was in the 67, 68, and then I should have gone ahead. I studied for my glider written at the same time I studied for my powered written, because I was using the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, and which is deals with, you know, it's power stuff. And so back then, you didn't have to have somebody sign you off to go take the test. You could just go down to the local FAA or wherever it was and take the test. So I went down to Baltimore one day. I was stationed up in Maryland. I went down to Baltimore and I took the written test for the power. And I said, well, you know, I think I did pretty good on that. So I'll take the glider test. So I took both of them and passed both of them at the same time.
Oh, so, that's great. Very, very cool. Okay. So he'll go back and recommendation that you would have taken both at the same time then.
and go ahead and get your glider and your power ticket at the same time. You know, the first hour I had was in a Citabria, you know.
There so, you go. Great yeah. plan. All right. And so our last question in Social Flight's Fast Five is, if you could choose anyone, alive or dead, past, present, someone that you know or never met or just read about, to spend an evening with, have a drink, whatever, is there anyone in particular that comes to mind?
My dad. You know, he would have been the one I'd love to do that again with, you know. He, like I said, he was a pilot in World War II, and he came out of World War II, and he flew B-25s. He flew sub-patrols down to Cuba and off of West Palm Beach and stuff. And so he'd flown a lot of stuff. He was really interesting, and that's how I got hooked, you know?
Yeah. That's a wonderful answer, and it makes an awful lot of sense, and it helped make you who you are today.
You're
which
correct.
Is someone that we all respect, and I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to join us here on well, Social Flight Live to share your story and your artwork and so much more.
Well, thanks for having me. I sure appreciate it.
It really is wonderful. Let's make sure everybody knows where to find you online. It's lionsstudios.com. Is that correct?
Lionsstudio.com. Two S's in the middle.
Lionsstudio.com, and I'll tell everybody there you can see this wonderful collection, both general aviation, military, other things as well.
Right.
And be sure to check that out. It's really something, and you can play the game of trying to find the 1951 pickup truck.
Yep, that's the good one.
Well,
good luck.
Sam,
good luck
again,
with that.
Thank you so much for taking time to join us here. I treasure everything that you contribute to general aviation. I really appreciate your friendship, and I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
And I'm sure I'll see you back at Sun Info next year.
Oh, you got it. All right.
Okay.
Take care, my friend.
Bye.
Good night. And thank you for everything that all of you do to support general aviation and for joining us here on Social Flight Live. We'll be back next Tuesday, July 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, as always, with Brian Allen, the human-powered flight Gossamer Albatross. Is that what he flew across the English Channel? He is a remarkable individual. Started with hang gliding and cycling, and just a really amazing story of what it involved, combining aviation and athleticism to make that that feat happen of human-powered aircraft. So I promise you, he is really, really something to listen to. And then on just before we go to AirVenture, the week before on Tuesday, July 16th at 8 p.m., we've got Aspen Avionics President and CEO John Uzakai here. Aspen's got some really remarkable things going on there. I'm a huge fan of their products. They're celebrating an anniversary and cannot wait to share his story and hear the latest of what's going on in the aviation and avionics industry with John Uzukai. Until next time, thank you so much for joining us here on Social Flight Live, and I wish you all blue skies.